T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We got nothing but important news today. All right, so this may turn into the most important show of the year, because deer season is upon us. Archery season has begun, but in a month, a firearm season, the real part of it, you know what I mean? It's when things are really flying in the woods. And how many of you are going to be eating venison like your uncle shot, your grandpa shot, you shot? A lot of you, most of you. But we got a problem. There's lead shot everywhere. Lead shot has been part of the normal system, just like what we think of just regular, for what, dozens of years, hundreds of years? I don't know. But, we've got some new data that says, like, we need to switch right away, fast. Something's got to be done. This is important stuff. After we talk about the most important news of the year, we'll talk to some other good big news, which is that Tulabee is a new chef, local Minnesotan. It is the last weekend of the Plates for Good program. If you want to go out and splurge and treat yourself, and then you also want people in need to benefit, this is the last weekend to do that. We're going to talk about those two things. So, good show. Don't touch that dial. All right. So, first off, I've got Carol Henderson here. This is his last official DNR showing. He is retiring on Tuesday after 45 years. I could devote an entire weekend, I think, to Carol Henderson stories. You're wondering who went to Alaska and got us trumpeter swan eggs so we could rebuild the trumpeter swan population? That'd be Carol Henderson. He has been the non-game wildlife program supervisor for the Minnesota DNR for a long time, and he's been working there for 45 years. Do you have questions about lead shot, lead bullets, lead in your venison? Text us, 81807. Carol, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate being here.
So on behalf of all Minnesotans who like trumpeter swans, thank you. Oh. I was walking around Cedar Lake, just being my urban self last fall, and there were a bunch of trumpeter swans. I was shocked. It was like right here, right off 394 in the middle of the city.
Oh, yes. They're just an absolutely wonderful, inspiring bird. And we released 370-plus swans back in the late 1980s. And now we have over 20,000 swans in the state, and they're expanding to new marshes everywhere. And they're so exciting for people to enjoy.
They're so big.
Yes. They weigh up to 35 pounds. They're the biggest waterfowl in the world.
They look like they weigh much more than 35 pounds. They have their wings, and then they're so big. They're so noble. They're just astonishing to see.
Yeah, they're on the same level as bald eagles in terms of inspiration.
Yeah, and so you've got to feel, I want a career like yours. You look back after 45 years and you think, I did good. I made change in the world. Like,
oh,
that's
you.
Yeah,
it's been a wonderful career and worked with a lot of wonderful people along the way.
Yeah, I bet. And so you saw it all. You saw the raptor populations crash. You saw with the DDT and the different pesticide use, you saw the rebound.
Yes, we've watched this from the early stages when eagles in Minnesota were coming back. And then we captured eagle chicks just ready to leave their nest back in the early 90s and donated 5 eagles per year to places like New York, Missouri, Arkansas, North Carolina, Georgia to help them restart their eagle populations. And now they're doing well throughout much of the East with Minnesota eagles.
Minnesota Eagles. I didn't know that. Are you serious? We got Minnesota Eagles that were helping out in New York and all over the East Coast? Yeah. All right, there. More things to feel proud and excited about. But this is what we're here to talk about today. You emailed me and you were like, we need to talk about lead shot in food. I had no idea that this was happening. So why don't you break it down? You and the wonderful people at the DNR have been x-raying. Can you explain?
Yes. Well, we've found over the years working with the Raptor Center at the University of Minnesota that there's been a long-term problem with eagle deaths in Minnesota because they were dying of lead poisoning. And one of the things we were looking at is that the timing that they determined is that most of the eagles were dying during and after the fall deer season. and it related to the fact that the eagles were eating the refuse from the processed deer. When they got the deer in the woods, the eagles eat the refuse.
All right, I don't know if we're allowed to say gut piles on the radio, but that's where we're going there. Maybe
entrails.
Entrails. All right, so when you, obviously everybody knows you kill a deer in the field, you need to process it,
field dress it.
You need to field dress it so that it doesn't, you know, go bad. Like, this is just standard practice. You leave those in the woods, and you showed me a picture that blew my mind.
Yes, the eagles come in and they'll eat this, and it's not just one eagle. There might be 4, 5, 6 eagles all fighting over that one pile of free food. And the eagles even respond to the sound of gunfire to go find where that is. And
I did not know this. I did not know that an eagle hears a gunshot and is like, I got to go see what that's about. I'm going toward the gun. Really?
Yes. And actually, we've had reports like from Pat Riddick's nephew from the Raptor Center that the eagle will follow the hunters out into the woods and wait for the hunter to shoot the deer.
Really?
So they're a smart bird. But it gets them into trouble. So my interest in this started with looking after eagles and trying to figure out how we can reduce eagle mortality.
So this is the proverbial canary in the coal mine.
Yes.
But it's the eagle in the gut pile.
It's the gut pile problem. And so we looked at what was going on. But all of the major ammo manufacturers have switched over to producing non-toxic copper ammunition for deer hunting.
Okay, but wait, let's just keep going with this. So you found all of these eagles were dying because of the gut piles.
Yes.
And then a light bulb went off in your head and you said, well, if the shot is making it all the way into the entrails, it is also in the muscle.
Yes, and the Department of Natural Resources Section of Wildlife did a study back in 2008, 2009, where they did a research project shooting into dead sheep to see how does the bullet splinter when it hits, because that would be similar in shape and conformation to a deer. And the little lead fragments from a bullet, they splinter out and they go up to 12, 14 inches away from the wound channel and become embedded in the meat. And so it's not just eagles anymore, because we're saying, okay, people are bringing this home in their venison.
And so you did this study where you looked at, so a lot of people donate meat to food shelves, and that's fantastic. And then the DNR x-rayed them and found, and this is where my jaw just fell to the ground, you found that 15% of the meat that was being donated had these lead fragments in it. You extrapolate. This means that people that are eating venison, like 15% of them are eating lead. And people, if you don't know, lead is poison. It is really bad for you. It will damage your brain. It damages young brains. It'll make you dumb. It'll give you neurological problems. You do not want to be eating lead. And so we are here to say, everybody, it's got to switch to copper shot right away.
Right. And it's a simple change. The prices are about the same. They're actually more effective, more accurate. There are people who have practiced with copper ammo and gotten a group of it at 300 yards, an inch and a half in a circle. It's very accurate.
So it's a better bullet.
It's a better bullet.
And it's not going to poison you. And this is when I need everybody who's listening to go be a busybody. Your lovely, you know, your wonderful uncle who gives you venison, your great cousin. I mean, just be like, this is not like me, but I got to ask, you know, we need to switch everybody. We need to spread the word, because I cannot have my people being lead poisoned. This is not okay.
Right. And it's one of those things where it's not going to kill you, but it's going to degrade your abilities. For older people, it might be cognitive abilities. For children, it can actually reduce their IQ. It's not recommended for expectant mothers. All of these things are negatives, and it's easily changed. And the price of the copper ammo is comparable now, about $1.50 to $2 per shell. And a good hunter isn't going to use more than 4 or 5 shots per season. So you're not looking at even hardly $10 for the cost of your shells.
Yeah. So this is just, we got to spread the word. And I saw these numbers about 15% of the venison that you're seeing is got lead shots, you know, just like through it. And I think we're just extrapolating, nothing better than pheasant in the fall, right? I mean, but everybody knows you know, when you're eating pheasant that somebody shot, you know, don't chew down too hard because there's probably shot in there. That also needs to not be lead.
Yeah, and the non-toxic shot shells on upland areas, those pellets fall on the ground and they get subsequently eaten by a number of birds that pick up the pellets as seeds. They think they're seeds. So any way we can reduce the release of lead into the environment.
And it's all going to get down into the water if it just lies there. And so what the operative word, the words we're looking for are non-toxic shells, right?
Yes, non-toxic. Some of them are going to be copper or copper composites, maybe with zinc. For shot shells, upland hunting, look for tungsten or bismuth types of shells. There also are some tin types of shells. But when I looked at the deer hunting, last year we had 500,000 deer hunters. They took about 200,000 deer. Average deer, about 40 pounds of venison. If you look at 15% of that venison, that's, well, this 8 million pounds of venison harvested in Minnesota last year. 15% would be 1.2 million pounds of lead-tainted venison that people ate this past year. That's not smart. That's not good.
No, and there's no benefit. There's no benefit to lead. You're not like, oh, I got to get my USDA amount of lead. It's really bad.
The most important byline here is that this is not a criticism of hunting. I mean,
not at all.
This is a wonderful tradition in Minnesota, and it's something we really care about. But it's just about how we hunt as a responsible person.
No, nor was switching from you know, lead paint to latex paint. That was not a criticism of painting. This is just a better practice. So,
right.
You know.
We don't want those unintended consequences that continue after the deer season.
No, absolutely not. We do not want lead in our blood. We're against it. This is not a radical proposition. This is not, I wouldn't think, a partisan issue. Anybody who wants lead in their blood is a... maybe already has lead in their blood because they're not thinking straight. It's a terrible thing to happen to your nervous system. You don't want it.
No, and we don't want to feed that to our children and our grandchildren and our friends, anybody. It's deleterious to everything.
All right, so Carol Henderson, this is you've had this fascinating life where you've helped Minnesota in all these ways. You brought back eagles. Now they're letting us know that we have poison in our blood supply. That's an unusual twist of events. Thank you, Eagles, for alerting us to this bad situation. And I don't know if you're allowed to talk about this, but you're also looking at toxic sinkers and...
Yes. Within the next few days, there should be a publication in the Federal Register about a plan that we have submitted to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, because the BP oil spill back in 2010 caused impacts on loons that were wintering in the Gulf of Mexico. And so we submitted a plan for loon conservation for Minnesota. We were the only northern state that applied for funding, and they're going to be announcing this probably Monday or Tuesday, very, very soon. And part of that package will be to promote the use of non-toxic jigs and sinkers, the tiny ones, like split shot and little jigs. There are a number of Minnesota manufacturers, many of them up in the Brainerd area. They're already making this, but it's sometimes hard to find them in the sporting goods stores. You need to ask for it.
Okay, we need to buy non-toxic
jigs and sinkers. They're made of tungsten or bismuth.
Right, because that's going to end up in your food, too, because you go fishing, then you're going to eat the fish. This is not good.
Well, it's not so much a problem with people eating it, but loons, when they dive to the bottom, they pick up little pebbles to grind up the minnows they eat. But if they pick up a lost jig or sinker, like a split shot, all it takes is one split shot to kill the loon. And we have dead loons that are turned in every year because they ate lead.
Ugh.
And so if you want to save the state bird, use non-toxic fishing tackle. If you want to save the national bird, the bald eagle, use non-toxic ammo for deer hunting.
And you want to save yourself.
Yes, and yourself.
This is just a basic self-preservation. Stop eating lead. There, yeah. I'm just radical. I'm coming out. We do not want. And so, of course, people are going to ask when I see, you know, venison jerky in the grocery store, is this what we're talking about? That is not it. Venison that enters the food supply through commercial means – that is goes through the same process that, you know, cows and chickens do. It's commercial slaughterhouse. There's no lead shot involved in that. So don't – this is not applied to venison, you know, your venison jerky that you're getting at the co-op. This applies to, you know, people shooting – you know, firearm season starts in a month. This is for everybody who's like, I think I will buy some bullets so I can get this going. You gotta do the non-toxic thing. I do not want you – to have lead poisoning. None of you. No. All of you. I want you to not have that.
And so the decision on what ammo to buy needs to be more of a family decision, because in the past, deer hunters basically just would buy what they've always used. And now they need to get some further input on these other consequences and look for the non-toxic, because they're really good. Most of the people I've talked to have said once they switched over to the copper ammo, they never switched back.
Right. All right. This is your homework, everyone. I'm not asking you to do small things. I want you to start talking about this to the hunters in your life. If you're a hunter, start talking about it to the other hunters in your life. We do not want anyone eating lead. That's in the past. Okay. Carol Anderson, I can't thank you enough. And on behalf of everybody, thank you for bringing back trumpeter swans and all the work you've done in Minnesota. You have made it a better place.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a wonderful life and a really happy one. In terms of helping the environment and the wildlife all around us.
And listeners, we got a treat. We got to hear Carol Henderson 2 days before he retired. This is a very cool thing. All right, when we come back, we're going to not be talking about lead. We're going to be talking about tomatoes. Ugly tomato season, it's upon us. All right, we're going to switch from talking about lead and deer to talking about imperfect tomatoes. So have you been to the farmer's market this week? If you go, you're going to see baskets and baskets of tomatoes that taste good but look bad. They're kind of exhausted, as we all are. It's hard. It's hard to be a misfit tomato, right? They're a little bruised. You're a little overripe. You're a little underripe. You got all kinds of problems, but you're here, and you're still wonderful, you ugly tomatoes at the end of the season. All right, so I've put up at wccoradio.radio.com/Dara. There's a link on my Facebook page if you can't find it, Dara.Grumdahl. Got a straight link into the imperfect tomato recipes. You can either look at recipes or just work with the ideas, because this is how you do. All right, one of them I got is Jamie Oliver, the British chef. Jamie Oliver, smashed tomato and olive salad. So what he does is he takes the small tomatoes, your cherry tomatoes, kind of smashes them, add really briny olives and red wine, basil, black pepper. You think, well, you don't usually put vinegar in these kind of things. But here, because you got this imperfect tomato, it kind of blends it all. It's a delicious thing, and it just makes it just covers up all imperfections. You can do this with salsa, too. That's another salsa thing. But you know how to make salsa. I'm not putting that recipe up. All right, I got more recipes. I've got tomato-rubbed bread, as they do in Barcelona. You ever been to Spain and you do that thing? They take some bread and they rub it with garlic. They rub it with tomato. That is just so good. And you can do that. It's perfect with your kind of ugly, messed-up tomatoes. If you can actually get some char on that bread by toasting it, oh, that is living large. I got the recipe up for that. What about a fresh blender tomato sauce? Get that big bushel of tomatoes. Take the bad parts out. Throw the rest in the blender. Whir. Then you got a fresh sauce. That is good. If you make enough of this, you can freeze some. You'll be living like it's summer for months. Blender gazpacho. I already heard from somebody on Twitter. They're making this one because they looked at the recipes. They were like, this is good. Put all the things in the blender again, tomatoes, onions. I'm kind of, you know, like I'm never quite totally there with the cold soups, but gazpacho, maybe clear out the liquor store and the rosé. It's got to be on bargain shelf by this time. Invite your friends over. What are you doing? You're having an ugly tomato party. Why not? You need a reason to have a party. That's a good one. And my last, this I make this all the time. It's just kind of a dirty, silly caprese thing where you take some kind of cheese, mozzarella. If you don't have mozzarella, you can work with feta. Cube up your tomatoes. Add cucumbers if you got them. Make a little dressing with pesto. That is just, you get so much done with that salad. All right, these are all up at the WCCO Radio website. They look good. They are delicious. You're going to love our ugly tomatoes. And we come back, we're going to talk to Matt Leverty from Tulibee, talk about the Plates for Good participation last weekend to treat yourself and do good in the world. That's what we're talking about when we come back. Yeah, we've got Matt Leverty here. This is I didn't know Matt had taken over Tulibee. They're keeping it on the down low. That is the hot, buzzy restaurant in the North Loop that never quite found its identity, but still had all the people piled up to play pool at the very wonderful pool table. And Little Bird told me, Matt Leverty, your dad is listening. He's a big CCO listener.
Oh, he is. Yeah, he's a huge CCO fan, has been for about, 60-something years. I'm not going to date him on air.
Fantastic. Hello, Matt's dad. You want a shout-out?
Yeah, Mark Leverty. He actually retired from 3M yesterday after 37 years. So, happy retirement.
Amazing. So, is he going to be at Tulabee hanging out, getting some soup?
Yeah. he will be. He stops by whenever he can. He always claims that it's too far of a drive. He lives in the Hudson area now, but I tell him that.
You got that new bridge. Yeah, well, I guess that's more Stillwater.
It's 45 minutes. I used to live, 2,000 miles away. He can come and visit me every once in a while.
See that? Mark Leverty, get in your car. All right. So, you grew up in the Stillwater area, and you started cooking?
Yeah, I did. My only real job that I ever had was cooking. Started when I was 14 years old. I worked at a fast food restaurant in Hudson. I lived in the Lakeland area, which is right across the bridge. And I went to school at UMD. While I was there, I was working in kitchens up there. I was studying to be a statistician. I love sports, and I wanted to do something with that and math. And I was like, I want to work for ESPN or something like that. And I realized real quickly that was kind of a pipe dream. And while I was doing all of this, I was cooking in restaurants. I worked at a place called Sarah's Table up in Duluth.
Oh, sure. That's a great place.
Yeah. And, I basically said, all right, maybe I'll give this cooking thing a try. I think I like this a little bit more. And it was, my grandmother was a home ec teacher at Stillwater Schools for years. And
I love home ec.
Yes. She is a dying breed. And she showed me how to cook at a young age. And, I always loved making lefse with her and learning about the Minnesota
staples. Whoa, a born lefse maker. You may be the first chef in town I've talked to who knows how to do that. That's manipulating the paddle, the whole thing.
Man.
That's hard to do.
And she's still doing it. She's pushing 90, and she still makes all her own food.
Oh, seriously? I'm going to talk to you. Maybe we can get a Saturday afternoon class that she can lead at Tulabee.
Oh, she would love it. She would love it. She's She was a great teacher, but more so I was just kind of the pesky kid, like bothering her while she was making Thanksgiving dinner or something like that. So, I moved back to Minneapolis after college.
I love a world where being a statistician is impossible, but being a star chef is in reach.
Well, you know what? I thought it was kind of for me, everyone else was like, oh, that's such a strange jump. But for me, it was kind of something that was really, once I started doing it full time, I was like, okay, this is it. This is it. I still love sports. I still watch sports. I'm a huge Minnesota sports fan. But, I mean, cooking is my gig, and I'm so happy to be back in the cities doing it. So
I was very happy. I didn't realize that you had taken over Tulabee because it had been this kind of weird land of carpetbaggers where they're like, yeah. We're a Minnesota restaurant, and we know nothing about what this what's in this food shed, what's local, what could be. And
Absolutely.
It was just as a restaurant critic, very annoying to just constantly just be like, we're the most Minnesotan. It's like, you don't even know what you don't know.
No. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's when I came in there and I had done my research on the place, and it definitely had there was a little lacking of identity, especially from a place that just lives and breathes Minnesota and all other aspects of the hotel. So I like to think that I was a good influence on the restaurant since I came. But really all I'm trying to do is just get back to it being Minnesotan and being,
We have the greatest food. I will consistently maintain that the food here, the ingredients are fantastic, and people just don't know. And I feel like there is a learning curve. You have to be here. You have to hang out. And then you're just like, well, these Wild Acres chickens are amazing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And working with Pat at Wild Acres, and I'd worked with him 11, 12 years ago in the city. And when I came back, and Pat was the first one I called, and Pat, I need some ducks. Pat, I need some chickens. So, the working relationship that we have with farmers and growers in this state is just second to none. And I'm glad I came back in the spring, summertime, as opposed to the wintertime, because I probably would have been really depressed by the offerings. But like, it was such a great, bountiful summer, and it's I mean, it was. I heard you guys had a really bad winter last year, so I'm.
It was long. Yeah, it felt long.
I'm glad that I missed that. I don't know if I'm ready to. I always say, once you're a Minnesotan, you're born into that, and you can survive the winters, but. Living in Las Vegas for the last 10 years and coming back here, I'm a little nervous for my first winter back. But
oh, well, I know we were just saying that we're not into, you know, the Nordic foods. But I will say the one thing that I have enjoyed the most about reading the weird Nordic chefs and their cookbooks and all this is that they get very into, like, old beets. Old potatoes. Yeah. Like, what happens to a potato that's been sitting in the root cellar and then it starts to get wrinkly? Your first instinct is, throw it away. It doesn't look good. But actually, those Nordic chefs have brought new love to the wrinkly old winter vegetables. So
for sure. And that's kind of the cool – that's kind of what we're doing at Tulibi now is almost preparing for the winter, because I have the luxury of having such a great big space that I – you know, we have a fermentation cellar. We have a huge butcher room, so we're aging a bunch
that's
of meats.
That's so cool.
We're taking vegetables. We're fermenting. We're pickling. We're preserving – just so that we can have all this great produce available for the winter. So that was kind of like the first thing that I did with my chefs there is, all right, we got to save all of this stuff so that we can have it throughout the winter. So, yeah, I mean, that's the cool part about, you know, the whole Nordic influence of Tulibi is just those ancient practices of preserving and gearing up for a terrible, terrible winter, which I'm sure – yeah, we'll see.
Birchwood Cafe put out a cookbook was it last year or 2 years ago, and they divvied up the winter into, I think it was 8 seasons or something. And when at first I was like, we don't have 8 seasons. That's silly. but then I actually lived with it for a while, and they divided up winter into kind of like early winter, when it's super fun to see all the, you know, root vegetables. And then like, you know, I think they call it frost, when it's just only the sturdiest roots are still with us, you know, and it's a good way of thinking about it, because it really is, you know, November winter is totally different than February winter.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And it's, you know, coming from a place that where, you know, growing up here, learning about how to cook in the seasons. And then I'm so excited to come back to it, because it's living in the California area or Las Vegas area. You have the luxury of having the best produce at all times. And now it makes you
lazy and soft.
Oh, it for sure does. No, it does. But it's I'm so excited to have the, you know, when it's February and there's nothing around, I'm excited to be able to come up with stuff that'll still taste good and it'll speak to the seasons and speak to the place that we're at. So
that's fantastic. Yeah. All right. So the reason that we're having you here, and I'm so happy that you're here, is that we wanted to talk about the fact that you're supporting the Second Harvest Heartland, the Big Hunger Charity. You're supporting their Plates for Good program, which we at CCO are big fans of.
Yes. Yeah. An old friend, Sue Zellickson, stopped into Tulibi a couple months ago and got me in touch with Second Harvest Heartland. And that was something that I think Tulibi or the whole Hewing Hotel was ready to start, you know, being on the philanthropic side and start giving back. And I had done a lot of stuff before with previous gigs with, you know, working with the Ronald McDonald House, doing things with you know, Second Harvest in other states. But this is I'm happy to give back, because it's, you know, it's a huge subject, and, you know, childhood hunger is so prevalent amongst, you know, so many parts of the country, but Minnesota is.
Yeah, the last numbers I saw were, you know, just so heartbreaking. So 1 in 11 households in Minnesota are affected by hunger. 10% of those people are seniors, and 33% are under 18. So, right. You know, like we live in such a complicated world where we're throwing out so much food. And so many people are hungry. And Second Harvest Heartland is kind of the gold standard. They work with a lot of corporations to kind of take in any foods that are falling out of the supply chain. And for some reason or other, they are really able to maximize any money they get. $1 provides meals for 3 people. That's amazing. So the way this is the last weekend of the Plates for Good campaign. Yep. It was all of September. So if you know you're a procrastinator like me, maybe you waited till today, but it's not too late. You go out, or you can go to Tulabee for brunch in the morning.
Yeah,
and 10% of your bill, like, it can make a big difference.
Yeah, we're doing basically what they asked us to do was, you know, if you, whatever donations you could do was great. And I think Tulabee, as well as a lot of restaurants, we kind of took that and ran with it. So yeah, we're donating 10% of all food sales for Sundays, Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays to Second Harvest. So Sunday, yeah, is the last day. So we're open for brunch. Yeah, we would love to be able to help Second Harvest as much as we can. So yeah, come
Fantastic.
On down.
Fantastic. All right. So if you want to find out more about their other restaurants too, if you're looking for something close to your house, platesforgood.org. Matt, I can't thank you enough for coming in today.
Yeah, thanks. It was awesome to be here.
All right. Shout out to your dad. Go visit your son. You can't just let him be cooking for other people. Exactly. He's got to cook for you, too. All right. When we come back, we'll do the Ask Me Anything. The text line is up, 81807. Dara here. I am back. All right. This is a part of the show where I answer your questions. I got one. Where can I get a great recipe for pho? That's a Vietnamese soup and authentic ingredients. This is a great question, because what is better than a real Vietnamese bowl of soup? Like, just so the broth can be so good. And that is your key to looking for a recipe. I will post one up on my Facebook page. I can't quite get one. But the most important thing is, if you're starting with like a can or a box or whatever of broth, it's not going to be good. You need to actually make the broth. And I will say the Instant Pots and stuff have made this kind of easier. You need bones to make this good. You need beef bones or chicken bones or a combination. Because you want the broth to have really good, deep flavor. So that's it. I will if you're looking at recipes and they're starting with cans of bouillon, whatever, you know what I mean, that's not where you want to go. You need all that. And then in terms of the other ingredients, maybe galangal, maybe lemongrass. Most of the Asian markets will have those at this point, because we're blessed in the Twin Cities with a very vibrant Southeast Asian community, and they have done the work of getting all those good ingredients here. All right. So I got another from the text line. We got questions about the thing. All right. So we forgot to mention vultures in the wildlife that's damaged by lead shot. Yeah, that is a good point. Vultures are part of it, too. I got love for vultures. Why not? I got a question, which is that one texter wrote in, say that any and all deer my friends and I have donated have been shot with arrows. Oh, that's interesting. Because we didn't even think about how much, you know, so if 15% of what they're examining has lead shot in it, then that doesn't even count the arrows. So, and good for you if you're a bow and arrow hunter. That's a lot of skill. My hat's off. I got another question. Want me to remember crows and coyotes, or coyotes? I never know how to pronounce that. It is saying that when they see a gut pile, everything else comes from the entrails. So we got to protect all those. I have a question. Most hunters now are on board with no lead. We like the birds and animals, et cetera. We are not the knuckle draggers some would portray us as. I would say that, you know, if people are portraying hunters as knuckle draggers, they're lame, and I don't like those people. I would never do this. To me, this is the same as lead in paint. Like, we didn't know that lead in paint was having, that we were getting lead poisoning from it. And this isn't just, I mean, I super care about the eagles. I super care more about the people. You guys, I'd not want your crock pot full of venison meatballs to be putting lead in your body. So, you know, this is one of those no harm, no foul situations. We did not know that there was lead in it. Now we know. Gotta tell people. And if this comes across as criticism of hunting, it is not. We are the top predators. We have got to, this is our environment. We took out the top predators. We are now the top predators. If we want to have a healthy environment, you know, we can't have just a babillion deer, but that would be crazy. It's not going to work like that. So I'm all for hunting season. I'm all for hunting. I'm all for hunting and not eating lead. That sequence of events. All right, so I got another question about roast beets, how to peel them. Well, here's what I like to do. I like to put a little oil on my hands so they don't get stained, and then just, you know, kind of rub them back and forth. It's handwork. I don't find peeling roast beets works with tools so much. So if they're good and roast, the skins should pretty much slip off. That's what I got there. All right, next week, we're going to have Tim McKee on the show. He's a big fancy chef. All over Minnesota, a bunch of people in restaurants are making a big showing about supporting sustainable seafood. We are the leaders. You know, I've talked about this before. I love Minnesotan and our efforts to be good people and make the world a better place. We'll talk about all that with fish next week. Till then, you know, go out there and get an apple. It's peak apple season. Triumph of fruit. And I will meet you back here next week on Off the Menu.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.